Good evening, good evening. Welcome to your Wednesday Night Live on this. Oh my God, is it almost the end of March already? The 26th of March 2025. And I am all ears, eyes, and vocal cord, singular, for your questions and comments. Let's go straight off with people's thoughts. And don't forget freedomain.com/donate to help out their show. Steph, do you think it has always been like this, or is this recent, where most women rate most men ugly? And this, of course, is the picture. It's a famous picture from some social media site or a dating site. How men rate women. It's sort of an even bell curve. How women rate men, that there are almost no very attractive men, and all of that. So let's get that mic in just a smidge closer. So one of the, and this is going on in social media at the moment, and one of the things that's a real challenge for the modern world as a whole or at the moment is the issue that women are no longer really as interested in pleasing men as they are gaining status with other women. I don't know if you've noticed this, but it seems to be tragically common that women will signal to other women rather than attempt to get the attention of men. Of course, you know, there's tons of exceptions. I just want to make sure that we are good here. But yeah, there's tons of exceptions, but turning women from trying to please and woo men, or at least get men interested in them, to state a signal to other women is a big issue. So, for instance, you can see this showing up in a number of places. One of them, of course, is the issue of makeup, that women wear a lot of makeup and impractical clothing, and men don't particularly like that. Most men prefer the natural look rather than that sort of shellacked, empty Barbie encased in plastic sex doll look. So getting women to go from like purses, right? So purses are of course status from female to female. Men don't care about it. Some of it is productive, which is that women like nice houses and great kitchens and all of that, which men don't particularly care about, but that has value to the family as a whole. So what's happened, of course, is that women, like I was just reading this, did I bookmark it? I was just reading this thing on X the other day. No, actually, I think it was today. It was today. And I'll see if I can dig it up. If not, not a big, not a huge deal. But it was a woman who was completely terrified. No, I didn't save it. But this is a woman who was completely terrified because she had just dated a man for 3 months and she had gotten pregnant and she was just terrified. She was 30. I think he was 31. And she was terrified that he was going to think that she was just baby trapping him, because even though he was in his early 30s, he did really well financially. So the disasters that can strike women in this world are almost impossible to imagine. Let me just see if I can find it. I'm not very good at searching on X, although I should probably use Grok for that. Did I hit it? Did I hit it? Oh, I found it. My gosh. Okay. No, yes, yes. No, I thought I did. I thought I did. Oh, so close. I don't think I'm going to be able to find it. So it's really tough, of course, for women if you get pregnant with the wrong man. I mean, this is just appalling. Appalling. It can completely ruin her life. And so it probably doesn't feel like a woman has a lot of choice in her life as a whole. If she gets pregnant outside of wedlock, for the most of human history, this would be a complete disaster. And I don't know if you've seen these studies, but there was this guy, I think he studied like 83 different civilizations and found out that once monogamy was thrown by the wayside, society kind of collapsed within three or so generations. Right? So getting women to shift their pleasure preferences from males to the hive mind of females, it's pretty good for consumerism. It's pretty good for collapsing the birth rate. And so the problem is that for women, a lot of women, obviously not all, but for a lot of women, they bond by complaining, right? A lot of women bond by complaining. And you get together and you complain about your boyfriend, or you complain about society, or you complain about men as a whole. And so if a woman says, and you've got to sort of just try and picture this from the female point of view, of course, I know we have women here, but for the men as a whole, that the price of community among women is usually the lowest common denominator personality. They tend to dominate women's friend groups and social groups and you know, village groups and so on. And that's because the lowest common denominator is likely to be the most vengeful and aggressive in spreading gossip and reputational destruction and so on, right? So if a woman is complaining about her husband in a group of women, and another woman says, "My husband is great, I have no complaints about him at all," the air gets sucked out of the room, and other women will view that as a lack of sympathy, right? A lack of sympathy, a lack of empathy, and why would you brag about your own husband when this, you know, when Sally is facing real difficulties with her husband? That's a lack of empathy and so on, right? So the complaining thing is really, really important. So if a woman says, "I can't find any good-looking guys," right? What is really going on? Well, most people, of course, don't have statements of thought or intention or originality or independence. Most people have statements designed to show status, to look good, that kind of stuff, right? So if a woman says, I see all these pretty women and most men are just ugly. So that's aligning with the female hive mind rather than praising and pursuing a provider and protector. Of course, a lot of this has to do with the fact that women don't need men's resources directly because they can get men's resources through the power of the state. They can just vote away men's resources and consume men's resources, and so they don't in particular need it. Now, the fact that you don't need material resources doesn't mean that your emotional life has caught up with that redistributive reality. So this is why women tend to get more anxious and depressed and stressed and overwhelmed and all of that. And, you know, a little crazed if they don't have men around. To be fair, if men don't have women around, they tend to get a little isolated, a little introverted, and so on, right? So I think for people as a whole, or for women as a whole, trying to get back to, I don't know, really liking men, wanting men, needing men, and so on. Like, I'm obviously perfectly frank about this. Like, my life is infinitely better with my wife in it. And it's not even, like, it's not even close. It's not even close. Just how much better my life is with my wife. And my wife would say the same thing about having me. in her life, that it is infinitely better having me in her life. Same thing with my daughter and myself and so on. So women are, when they say, I don't find men attractive, what they're saying is men are low quality and they are aligning with the sisterhood. Now, aligning with the sisterhood has its value because men are off hunting, they're off working, and they're doing all this kind of stuff. And then what happens is women need to have other women support them in their raising of the children and the hunting, like local hunting and gathering or whatever, gathering of so on. And so women need other women, but women bond with other women, but women need men, right? I mean, one of the reasons, I saw this the other day, one of the reasons why women have difficulty deciding where they're going to go and eat or where they want to eat is because they didn't really evolve that way. They cooked whatever their man happened to bring home, right? So they didn't really make choices in that kind of way. So it's not in particular that most women rate most men ugly. It's that they're signaling to other women to be negative towards men, which is the takeover of the bottom quintile of functional women in the hive mind, because women don't need men. And in terms of misery loves company, it's true for men as well. I think it's a little bit more true for women, that if a woman is unhappy in a relationship, a lot of times the good thing to do, or the good thing that's considered to do, is let her vent, let her complain, as opposed to trying to solve her problem by giving her sort of practical advice or things like that. So, all right, let's get to your other questions. In a stateless society, how would corporations like BlackRock, that is one of the reasons why living costs have been going up, be dealt with? Well, I would invite you, I did conversations with Stefan Kinsella, K-I-N-S-E-L-L-A, many years ago, and I would also invite you to read my book, it's free, called The Future, at freedomain.com/books, but there are no corporations in a free society. Corporations are legal fictions created by governments to bribe the heads of corporations with immunity from liability in return for corporations towing the line of the government as a whole. So there really wouldn't be corporations in that sense in a free society. And corporations or business entities without the power of the state is just like a group of people who are trying to serve customers. And of course, it used to be the case that if you ran a bank and your bank ran out of money, like you lent out too much and you lent out badly and so on. If you ran a bank and the bank ran out of money, what would happen is you would lose your house. You would lose everything. You would be sued into oblivion, have to declare bankruptcy, and maybe go to jail. But then when fiat currencies came in the sort of absolutely epoch catastrophe of the First World War, fiat currencies came in because governments had to fight on in the First World War, because if they just kind of all shrugged and went home, then they would have faced certain revolutions or overturning of the existing political structures in their home countries. Because like, wait, we fought for 2 years, we got nowhere, and now we're just going home again. What was the point of that? And they would have lost credibility for the next war, which they're generally thirsty for. And so they had to fight on. The only way they could fight on, given that they generally ran out of gold, was to create fiat currency and income taxes and so on. And so, and of course, as you know, it was 1913. It was a terrible year for America, but that was before the war. So after you get fiat currency, the economic system is wildly destabilized. And then what happens is banks go out of business because the government is printing money and then shrinking the printing of money. It's raising and lowering your interest rate. So it's like trying to play basketball when people keep dialing up and down the gravity. Like you just fall over and miss all the time, and it's just horrible. And so you needed expanded corporate protections because the government was dialing up and down the economy, and the people who were in the business world were mad at this. And so the government, rather than, of course, going back to a gold standard or something like that, the government's I just gave more corporate shields from liability to the rich people, to the people who owned companies. So none of this is really a factor in a free society. Thank you, Peter. All the best on tonight's show. May it be the best one yet. I will do my best. And let's see here. Thank you to everyone else. freedomain.com/donate. Somebody says, I was recently in Montreal. I lived there for 4 years, at least in the winters and spring and fall. I was shocked by how friendly the women are there. I've always lived in New England, and women here consistently treat men with hostility, entitlement, and contempt. Montreal girls are also well-dressed, whereas my local women typically wear loose sweatpants and sweatshirts in public, very demoralizing. There is a consensus among men that French-speaking Canadian women are dramatically higher quality than English-speaking ones in both Canada and the US. Why is this? I would assume, like up until the 60s, there was a very strong Catholic culture in Quebec, of course, and then it was sort of consciously dismantled by leftists and so on. And with that conscious dismantling of Catholicism, the birth rate, I mean, it used to be like 6, 7, maybe even 8 children a family, and now it's completely collapsed from that. So, but I think that some of the, remember that it takes a while for corruption to really seep through society. So I was raised in a time when the teachers were pretty sane, because the teachers were trained in the 50s when I was going to school, late 40s, 50s. And so they had that sort of greatest generation practicality. And then it sort of gets replaced. Every generation gets, the teachers get more and more crazy until you're kind of at the state where things are now. And so it takes a while for good values to leach out of, or to be driven out of, a particular mental system or culture. So I think that in the Quebec culture, which is based on Catholicism, women need men. The man is generally the head of the household. And if a woman doesn't get a man, you know, they have this in China too, right? Leftover women, side dishes, or whatever it is that they're called. And so they are, it's considered very embarrassing if you can't get a hold of a man, and you're basically not. And the other thing too, when you get a lot of married couples, they don't hang out as much with the singletons, for reasons I've sort of gone into before. So it takes a certain critical mass of people staying single for being single to be worthwhile. It's kind of like being unemployed, right? Notch talked about this. Was it Notch? The guy who founded Minecraft, who sold it for like $1 zillion. And he's like, yeah, it's kind of boring because, you know, I'm home. I've got all the money in the world, but everyone else is busy, right? So it takes a certain amount of, a certain number of people being unemployed for unemployment to be worthwhile. And this is why, in my day, when people started getting jobs as teenagers, sort of back when you could get a job as a teenager, when people started getting jobs as teenagers, everyone else kind of followed suit because there was just less and less to do because everybody was working. Hey, you want to hang out? No, I'm working. Hey, you want to go for a bike ride? No, I'm working. Hey, you want to do that? I'm working, right? So you might as well get a job. So that kind of is how that went as a whole. So it's the same thing with being single. If there are very few single people, they tend to be pretty isolated and unhappy. But if there's a fairly large contingent of social people, then they just hang around and prop each other up, if that makes sense. All right. Hello, Fred from the Netherlands. Hello, Creativity Questing. All right. Professora asks or says, I think men want a woman who is natural, normal, and wants to be his partner. He lives in a world of man, normal, and his expectations on beauty are good, natural hair, normal body weight, and a normal brain, and all of her teeth. Women in pornography uber accentuate that, and other women think they need that in order to compete. I'm not sure what you mean by that last statement, but men want women who are can both be dressed up and comfortable not being dressed up. Because if a woman always has to get super dressed up to do anything, then she's not going to be a particularly convenient mother. It's in high maintenance, right? A lot of work. Whereas if a woman can't ever get dressed up, then she is a professional liability for the for her husband, because you need to be able to dress up to work on to go to sort of business functions and so on, right? I remember when I was in the business world, my wife would come on business functions and meet the CEOs and all of the high rollers, and she was just fantastic with all of that, and it was pretty good for my career, because a man's confidence is going to be judged by the quality of the woman that he can get and keep. And so you want a woman who can dress up but doesn't have to, because if she has to dress up, that's going to be kind of neurotic, right? All right. Any other questions, comments? Happy to help. In the same way that a woman needs a man who's interested in status but not obsessed with it, if that makes sense. All right, why is that not going out? Hello, questions. Welcome. All right, do I need to refresh? Where's that showing up? Oh, good. It's coming. Just not showing up on that side. Hi, Steph. Hello, Hidden Dragon. Yeah, see, I mean, and also there's something about female sexuality. There's something about female sexuality, and maybe you guys can explain this to me, because I find this to be just wild. Just absolutely wild. And, I mean, I call it the Beatles phenomenon. And it is, when I was a kid, and I was born in 66, so when I was a kid, the Beatles were big. I mean, they'd, I guess, broken up in 70, 71, or whenever it was. But I remember on TV looking at the videos of the early Beatles concerts. And the Beatles were, you know, pretty terrified by their fans. George Harrison in particular, you know, you get chased around and people try to break into the car. Women would try to break into the cars and so on. And there's a Beatles song which goes, "As she came in through the bathroom window." And that's because, I think that's based on, I think it was Paul McCartney's house was broken into by Beatles fans who stole a bunch of stuff, Beatles fans being generally women. And I mean, the men appreciate the music, I suppose, but the women, when you see the women at Beatles concerts, like the sort of black and white 60s Ed Sullivan stuff, I mean, I don't quite understand it. And maybe people can sort of help me sort of follow this, but I just remember it just being wild to see, you know, because I won't imitate it, of course, but they're like screaming and fainting and clutching their face and crying and completely hysterical in the face of these, I guess, new pop rock stars. And I can't imagine that. I don't quite understand that, why the women went so deranged. I mean, the Beatles were cute and they're good singers and, you know, great songwriters and all of that. But I remember seeing that when I was a kid. I remember seeing that screaming, crying, and all of that, and going completely hysterical. And I just remember thinking, okay, there's something about the female mind, or at least this version of the female mind, that I'm just not going to get. Now, of course, this is at the grade six, the girls left Duran Duran. Yeah, that's right. They were coming to Toronto, and it was referred to as D-Squared Day. I was trying to explain Simon Le Bon, the name's Bond, Simon Le Bon, to my daughter the other day. Again, good-looking band. I remember their producer saying that he basically, I think, managed them and this never bothered again, because he said, "I'm never going to get a group as talented and good-looking ever again." And it was really something. Thank you, Anthony, for the tip. So, yeah, they scream and like clutching their, you know, skin and popping their eyeballs and fainting, and, you know, it's like Tom Jones, like when Tom Jones is a Welsh singer, would sing, women would like throw their panties at him, and I just remember thinking, like, this is kind of a foreign species in a very fundamental way, Women are kind of, and of course, I was young, so I didn't get that this is only sung women. Women, and of course, it is the women who are fans of the Beatles already, and you know, things like that. But that is wild. All right, so let me let's get back to your comments. Somebody says that response to the Beatles is due to extreme social proof, which is pharmaceutical grade crack to women. I don't know what that means. Do you mean that they're bonding with each other about how dreamy the Beatles are? And it's one of the reasons why they stopped doing live shows, is that they basically said, no, we can hear us over the screaming. And it was terrifying getting in and out of the venues, right? All right. Somebody says, after being gone for 10 years, I signed up to Reddit to try and sell some stuff I wanted to get rid of. In addition to being full of communists, most of the forums seem to be focused on the display and consumption of specific products. It appears to me that people are desperate for community and are basically buying stuff to try and join a peer group. Is this a new thing, or have we always had rabid materialistic consumer communists? I don't know, because I don't do Reddit. I don't think I have ever been on Reddit. Maybe I had a link or two over the years. But somebody says, also seen them, the groupies hanging around the entrance to the Maple Leaf Gardens, Puck Bunnies they were called. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Or someone says, a leak revealed that a massive portion of Reddit traffic comes from Eglin Air Force Base, responsible for cyber warfare. Oh, is that right? I didn't know that. Oh, so social proof women are attracted to men that they think other women are attracted to. Yeah. But it still has to be something more objective. But I still don't know why there's that sexual hysteria from women. All right. Hi, Steph. I read UPB. Great book. Still struggle a little, though. How does UPB differ from the categorical imperative? Can you give an example in application? Well, so the categorical imperative comes out of Immanuel Kant. And the categorical imperative is roughly act as if the principle of your action becomes a general rule for everyone. So if you want to steal, you have to say, okay, well, if my action becomes a general rule for everyone, can society function? And then the categorical imperative says that if the principle of your action, if you don't want other people to act on the principle of your action, don't act that way. And of course, the categorical imperative did not solve the problem of ethics. And we know that because of the 20th century. I mean, certainly 19th century to a smaller degree, but 20th century, I mean, it's just a century of absolute the slaughterhouse that Nietzsche predicted with the fall of God and the replacement of God by the state. So, and also, I remember this from my graduate school, my master's thesis. Then if Immanuel Kant, as he does, says that you basically have to obey the secular ruler no matter what, then clearly the categorical imperative is not something that solved the problem of course, at that time, it would be aristocratic tyranny, right? So he didn't get to peaceful parenting. He didn't get to the voluntary society. He didn't get to the non-aggression principle as a universal. He didn't get to property rights and private property as a universal and so on, right? So there's sort of three arguments against it. One is that it didn't work, and we did not get a free society out of the categorical imperative, and we did not get peaceful parenting or anything like that, number one. Number two, it tends to be, I call it diets for thin people, right? So a lot of moral nagging has to do with getting people to who are already sensitive and moral to kind of do that, right? So if you're kind of thoughtful and you say, well, I suppose if I'm a thief and everyone becomes a thief, society wouldn't work very well, so I probably shouldn't steal. But these are people who are morally sensitive and don't really want to steal in the first place. you know, psychopaths, sociopaths, people without a conscience, whatever, they'll just go steal and they really don't care about the categorical imperative. So to me, it was very important to have a moral argument or moral approach that did not rely upon somebody's pre-existing moral sensitivity, right? That was sort of important to me. So yeah, number one, it didn't solve the problem of parenting and tyranny. And number two, it tends to justify people who already are morally sensitive and thus does not save you from predation. It would be like giving zebra a weapon that only works against zebras and never against lions. Like, and the third is that so you can make a moral rule that serves your particular strengths as a person and then say, it could be, let's make it universal. So for instance, the strongest man in the village says, well, I think that the village resources should be determined by whoever's the strongest. Right now he is the strongest, so he's going to win that, and whoever can lift the most or toss the most capers or whatever it is, right? So he's going to say that the village should be ruled by whoever is the strongest. He's willing to make that a universal rule and standard because he knows he's going to win, right? And this is sort of how it works in politics, is that the election should be decided by the tallest and most charismatic candidate who has the best hair, right? That's the tallest candidate always wins. The guy with the best hair usually wins. And so people who are tall and with charisma and good hair, they're like, yeah, we should make height, charisma, and good hair the standard by which people get into power. Like, they're very happy with that. They're content with that. So it kind of works in the Kantian framework. So UPP is different because UPP is not about convincing individuals to be good, because you don't face your greatest threat from immoral individuals. You face your greatest threat from immoral ideologies, right? Ideologies or beliefs or, quote, morals that claim to be virtuous but are not. That's where you face your greatest danger, right? It's not the food, like if you open up the yogurt and the food is all blue and furry, you don't eat it, right? It's the food that looks like it's fine. That's what gets you, right? And the sort of quarter of a billion people murdered in the 20th century by governments, they were not killed by individual murderers. They were not killed by some axe-wielding Jack the Ripper guy in a park in the middle of the night, right? They were fundamentally killed by totalitarian ideologies from the left or the right, and fascism, communism, socialism, and so on. And so, because you can protect yourself against individual thieves and murderers, but as far as like really, really bad moral arguments that then get crystallized into dictatorial powers, you're kind of toast, right? So it is against the self-contradictions of hypocritical moral theories that UPP has as its strength, because you want to deal with the greatest predator and give people the greatest defense against the greatest predation, and the greatest predation is false moral ideologies that masquerade as virtue while empowering tyranny. All right. Ba-doo-ding. You can make people believe an idea by making it appear as if most others already believe that idea. Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's very true. And that, of course, is really the purpose of state-run education, right? All right, somebody says, Marble, thank you for the question. Steph, I find the calls you share very interesting and helpful. Do you ever find the conversations bugging you, getting into your personal space? I usually have to decompress and sort of shake them off if it's been particularly intense, like with the role players, with somebody who's really, you know, a family member or spouse or someone who's really dysfunctional. So I usually have to kind of shake it off often, and I'll go and work out or something like that, go for a sort of a brisk walk or something like that. So they do kind of worm into my brain, and I usually need to decompress, particularly if it's been like a 2.5 or 3 hour, very intense one, and so on. So I just actually I got two processed today, so there's some very interesting ones that are coming up. All right, so let's get to, where's that thumping? Oh yeah, that's there. All right, let's get to your messages. Thank you for your questions and comments. And while we're waiting for that, let's get to a new report. This is from Mrs. B on X. A new report shows that 50% of parents are financially supporting their adult children. Right. Right. That is an absolute condemnation, of course, on the financial system that people are laboring under as a whole. It is really absolute condemnation that children are just, young people are just not able to get ahead and all of that. So that's very sad. Oh, yes. Katie Faust wrote, J.D. Unwin studied 86 civilizations across 5,000 years and found, without exception, every society that abandoned strict sexual restraint, particularly monogamy, collapsed within 3 generations. But the good news is that the collapse is being documented in high-definition video, 60 frames a second in real time. Adam Rossi wrote, my friend's 10-year-old daughter killed herself after being relentlessly bullied. She was a classmate of my niece in whatever this particular town. Because, yeah, the cyberbullying is tough, right? Because the city of Roanoke, Virginia, is reeling from the devastating loss of 10-year-old Autumn Brooke Bushman, whose life was tragically cut short by suicide on Friday, March 21st, 2025. Autumn's passing has left an irreplaceable void in the hearts of her family, friends, and the entire community. As they mourn, they also raise awareness about the deep and lasting impacts of bullying, hoping to prevent another tragedy from occurring. Born on November 30th, 2014, Autumn was a bright, kind-hearted girl with an infectious smile and a radiant spirit. She deeply loved life, enjoying time with her family and friends, creating artwork and playing outdoors. Those who knew Autumn described her as compassionate, full of joy, and eager to make others smile. But beneath her warm and cheerful exterior, she faced an ongoing struggle that no child should ever have to endure. So, this is the bullying and stuff like that. So that was posted, and this woman, Rachel Wilson, said, please, if your child is being bullied, take them out of school and homeschool them. It's not worth it. Public schools suck anyway. I don't understand why parents would force a child to endure this so mom can get free daycare. Why? Yeah. I mean, let me ask you guys, were you bullied in school? Oh, thanks, Oliver. I appreciate that I appreciate that my explanation of UBB helped. I'm glad. And thank you for the donation offer, freedomain.com/donate. So, let's see. I was very briefly bullied in school. I think I was maybe 12. And it lasted for, I don't know, like a week or two. Some 17-year-old kid, boy. Some 17-year-old young man was kind of out to get me. Oh, and then there was the other time that my friend and I were stopped in the woods and by two older bullies and forced to build them a fire. And I called them out and, you know, pick on someone your own size. And then they punched me in the gut. And actually, I remember that the punch in the gut wasn't so bad. And I'm actually really, really glad I said that sort of back in the day because it was kind of pathetic. Teased but not bullied.
Yeah.
Yep, until I found a group. You said public school is the closest thing most people will experience to prison. I think that's actually a Michael Malice line, but I'm sure I've repeated it. Somebody says, I wasn't bullied by others at school, but I bullied myself, I guess, by laughing at myself to avoid others doing it. Yeah. Yeah. It is a very difficult thing. My response to bullying in general was I started working out like crazy. I started getting into sports. And I sort of became very cool. My brother helped me a lot with this. I wrote about this in my novel, The God of Atheists, which you should get at freedomain.com/books. It's a great book. But in my novel, The God of Atheists, my brother came back from England and, you know, helped me get a good haircut and dress better and all of that. So he really did sort of save me from that kind of stuff. And So all of that stuff is, so yeah, I mean, but single moms generally don't tend to raise boys with any kind of sexual confidence or romantic confidence or anything like that. So yeah, bullying is rough, man. Very rough. Very rough. And schools really can't do much of anything to solve it, because that would put teachers and principals in conflict with significantly aggressive parents and so on. That's a big problem. Thank you, Oliver. Somebody says, I was bullied so badly at boarding school, I spent lunchtime in the toilet at my next school as I was so terrified of being alone with the other girls. Oof. Yeah, girl bullying is rough, man. I really sympathize with that too. Somebody says, yes, I was bullied very lightly, but more by the girls. I was a year behind in math and stuck in a class with a bunch of girls who didn't like me. One of them poured chocolate syrup on my backpack. Sorry about that. I'm sorry about that. I found, dressing better, a good haircut, getting really into sports, starting to work out, that all helped quite a bit. And then my sort of social cachet in school went through the roof, because I started going to discos and nightclubs when I was 16 years of age. And some of the kids came and saw me dancing away with girls, and they were like shocked that I was there. And, my social sort of cachet went through the roof after that. I remember that. Somebody says, I had the worst luck with the bully. Turned out to be freakishly strong guy. Had 20 pounds on me, but could lift the stack. This was at 13. Later in high school, three guys tried to kick his ass. Locked the change room. He beat them. Later became a Green Beret. Yeah, because you don't know, right? Thank you, Lloyd. You don't know if the person that you want to pick that fight with are going to have that fight. You don't know if that person's just going to be some complete psycho. And that's kind of the risk, right? It's kind of the risk. All right. So somebody else wrote, William Costello on X wrote, this is from a Science Direct article, sciencedirect.com. Physical attractiveness far outweighs other traits in online dating success. Improving a person's attractiveness rating by one standard deviation increased success by about 20%. The same improvement in intelligence, height, and job was 7 to 20 times smaller than for physical appearance. Right. So, I think what this means is that people select on looks when they don't have to rely on someone for resources. And typically, men have selected on looks and women have selected on resource provision. And until recently, for men, resource provision so vastly outstripped mere looks that men were not strongly selected for looks, because if you're really good looking, that doesn't help you to, bring down the bison or whatever it is you're hunting. It doesn't make you a better hunter. It doesn't make you a better provider. It doesn't make you a better farmer, and so on. In war, maybe it'll give you some leadership deferential, because people defer to better looking people all the time. So I think that women becoming independent of male resources by being able to vote them from the state and from the next generation have turned women, in a sense, into men, and that women tend to choose by, we were talking about this earlier, women tend to pick according to looks now, which has kind of turned women into men. And male looks now has become more important because, for dating success, obviously male looks has become very important. But even in the business world, male looks, if you sort of see these male influencers, they all kind of look like the same guy, this big beard and square jaw and blunt face and all that kind of jocko stuff. You have to have a certain look. And if you have that certain look, then people will just take what you're saying as credible. Oliver says, yes, I was bullied, much less so after a growth spurt, and I developed some social skills, courage to talk to girls, and fashion sense. Also, the more I lied, the more I got bullied. The more I lied, the more I got bullied. Oh, interesting. Yeah, the rat utopia stuff. So a lot of men, you can sort of see this occasionally online. And again, I'm not saying it's very common in the real world, but online you can see these men with these Patrick Bateman, like American Psycho routines of like, you know, 5 a.m. I wake up and I iron my sheets and then I dunk my face in a bowl of ice water and then I go for a jog and then I lift weights and then I do random things while talking to a notebook computer and then I go and fry up some, God, what was it? There was one influencer who was, I still remember this kind of vividly years ago. I saw it. He had like steak drizzled in light glazes of honey and, you know, then he went skiing. Oh no, he went surfing. Sorry. Then he went surfing. And it is a way of just trying to sell you a lifestyle. And they are the beautiful ones, the self-groomers, right? They could just work out and stay lean and go and try and have sex with women, I guess, or men perhaps. But yeah, they just become the beautiful ones, like the in the mouse utopia experiments where you give mice all the food they could possibly want. You know, monogamy dissolves, child having offspring devolves and decays, and then there's a lot of laziness, and then you get these male mice who just kind of groom in the backdrop. They just kind of groom in the backdrop. And just grooming themselves. And you can see this sort of happening. You can see this happening in society as men turn more towards this endless grooming that seems to be suspiciously absent of women. And then men say, well, I guess if I'm beautiful or, you know, really fit or pumped or something like that, then all of these great things will happen to me. And yeah, it's not good. You should look up the mouse utopia experiments. They're quite obviously limited in their attachment to humanity, but well worth looking at for sure. All right, let's see, what else do I have for y'all? Honey Badger Radio. This is at Honey Badger Bite. I think this is Karen Strawn. I don't know the other women, but I talked to Karen Strawn many years ago on this show. A feminist. Could men and boys' anger come from being legal and social second-class citizens subject to the whims of criminal-minded women who aren't held accountable and lambasted by an ideology that blames them for human evil? Feminist. Nah, it's Tate. That's really something. Quite a powerful thing. Yeah, people, a society that will not fix itself must always find scapegoats for the inevitable dysfunctions that result. It was nice, somebody at Rothmus posted one of my old tweets. Being pro-communist is just a basic sociopathy test. If someone hears of 100 million slaughtered and replies, yeah, but, boom, total sociopath. And that got 420,000 views, which I thought was kind of nice. And what is it if I go to this one? How many people are like, where did Steph go? Wish Stefan Molyneux would post again. Why is he banned on platforms? I must have missed something. Always enjoyed his perspective, but like flipping a light switch, he was gone. I miss Molly Meme. Stefan Molyneux, please come back. Bring it back. All right. Where did Stefan go? I miss him. All right. I thought that was nice. I appreciate people posting the old tweets. This is interesting. Alexander, this is date at date psych, wrote, the conservative version of the blank slate is overemphasizing how much the family environment matters, how much being raised right is important, or how much having an absent father matters. The real red pill, in its original sense, would be that it is all confounded heavily by genes. The shared environment, the home environment, matters remarkably little in the big scheme of things, but the personality, behaviors, and psychology that you inherit from your parents is a big deal. Twins raised apart end up behaving in incredibly similar ways. Boys raised without fathers follow the same trajectories as their dads. Boys who behave good were raised in good environments because their parents had good genes and created that good environment for them. The environment is not the cause of the behavior. The genes produce the behavior and the good environment. I don't agree with that. I mean, obviously, genes are important in personality and all of that. But of course, a lot of psychological research is confounded by the fact that people send their kids to government schools where they get a lot of propaganda and a lot of, you know, boring, unimportant or false information. The real interesting question would be, you know, homeschooled kids versus like homeschooled kids and their parents' values versus government schooled kids and their parents' values. And of course, government school kids really can't, you know, they're taking kids out of the home and putting them into daycare. And, you know, when they're really young, it flips a switch so that people go with peers and teachers rather than parents. And that's, of course, why values don't get transmitted down. So it would be interesting to study that. And I don't know if that's ever been studied, but I think if parents are really home with their children and working with their children, instructing their children and so on, yeah, Steph is one website ever. OneWebsiteEver.com. All right, somebody wrote, I did have a turnaround where having friends wasn't a problem for close to a decade and a half, but most of them were not particularly deep. I later adopted controversial stances, mostly due to you for laying the groundwork of first principles, but the rest was me going a little overboard. And what I did have left went poof in the year 2017. Interesting. Does anyone remember the men's rights activities? When I was in high school, anyone tried to solve the problem of man got hit hard. Oh yeah, for sure. I tried creating a men's group in high school or university. I mean, it's not going to happen, right? I did love your daughter's implicit apology argument. I really enjoyed that. Yes, it was very good. It was very good. Mobius writes, now that I remember it, there was a kid who threatened me with a knife on the bus. I told my mom I didn't think he was serious. However, she called the cops. A grade school kid was terrified by the incident and also called the cops. The next day, the principal seemed more upset that my mom called the cops than the fact I was threatened. The kid was expelled. He'd been a member of the police explorers and they kicked him out. I understand it really turned his life upside down. Yeah, it's tough, man. It's tough because, you know, if you don't act and some kid gets stabbed, you know, I wouldn't have too much sympathy for what happens to a kid who stabs. I mean, maybe you're not I don't mean to be obnoxious that way, but maybe you're not a parent yourself. But it is really important to do whatever you can to protect your children. Sorry, that's kind of an obvious thing to say, but somebody wrote, it's kind of crazy how all of these AI companies decided to make their AI refuse a bunch of questions. And XAI was like, nah, actually, we'll just like give people what they pay for and not try to be their mommy and daddy. And then took basically all of the market share. Yeah, the amount of, we talked about this before, I talked about this truth about AI, but the amount of processing power that it takes to maintain the illusion that woke ideology is true is enormous. Absolutely enormous. The only gentlemen's clubs allowed are the ones that objectify women. Yeah. Yeah, it's very true. It's a very good way to put it. All right. Let's see what else do we have. Oh, yes. Lizzie Marbach wrote, a huge reason so many women are still single in their 30s is because men wasted their time in their 20s. I know so many women who wanted to get married in their early mid-20s, but the guy they dated kept putting off marriage, only to break up, meet a new guy, and have the same thing happen, wasting more years. Man children afraid of commitment are just as much a problem as girl boss feminists are, and we need to acknowledge it. Men and women, of course, have their different strengths. One of the things that women need to do is to help remind men of the passage of time. Because especially if you don't lose your hair, like men do not really denote the passage of time. we're just kind of bricks. We're just kind of bunk, 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 march along. We don't have periods. We don't, you know, we don't age in any particularly vivid way. And I mean, I still sort of, I can do everything. Yeah, I'm going to be 59 this year, right? I can do pretty much anything and everything that I did in my 20s. I mean, I've tried to maintain my health and muscles and exercise and all that kind of stuff for sure. But I can still do, I mean, there's very little that I can't do now that I could do, I don't know, gosh, what is it, like 35 years ago or 40 years ago? Oh my God, 40 years ago, I was in my teens. So we just don't really note the passage of time. I mean, that's one of the good things about going bald or going gray or whatever. It does help you sort of denote the passage of time. But men can very easily get stuck in a kind of Groundhog Day thing. And that's tough. It is really up to women to denote the passage of time and remind men, because women have a shorter runway, right? And for men, not committing will often get you a better woman. Honestly, I mean, it's sort of this, I'm not saying it's great, but it is kind of one of the things that happens that for if a man can stay single into his 30s, he can usually get a more attractive woman because now he's got resources and usually he doesn't look particularly old. So he's still got youthful vitality and vigor, and he's got usually money, some success, and some, you know, the woman doesn't have to go through the struggle phase, right? Like I was talking to a woman in a call-in show it was, she wanted to date all the guys. And I'm like, well, you get to bypass the struggle phase, right? You don't have to live poor and lean when the guy's starting out. You can skip over the whole struggle phase. So for a man to defer marriage can often have significant advantages. But for a woman to defer marriage is not so good. Is not so good at all. All right, let's see if we got any more questions or comments. I tried the ChatGPT in a super work. I only use Grok. Yeah. Yeah, that's my go-to as well. So it's up to the woman to say at the beginning, are you dating for marriage? I want to date for marriage. I want to date for kids. Are you dating for marriage, right? Women have a difficult time sometimes saying to a man, I'm only dating for marriage. They have a tough time with that because if they are particularly, you know, they get the tingle, right? They get the tingle. And the guy who gives a woman the tingle has a great deal of power over her. Great deal of power over her. And she will not put down the requirement for marriage because she wants to get her itch scratched in a way, right? Jason Liu, he wrote this. I think it's quite brilliant. Quite brilliant. He said, I worked a lot on my mental health, and now I am no longer ambitious. It's kind of true. It's kind of true. A woman wrote in response to, what was the original tweet? The original tweet was, one's 30s are a crucial period for professional advancement, especially in so-called greedy careers, those who where returns to longer hours are non-linear. But one's mid-30s is also when most women's fertility begins to drop. Yes, very tough. I mean, you can either have men and women making the same money, or you can have a civilization that continues. You can't have both. And Liz Wolf, at Liz Wolf Reason, with an E, wrote, a dose of reality that many people probably don't want to hear. What reproductive technology can't fix is that if you delay kids until 40, you miss out on a lot of years with those kids. Your parents may be dead or in severe decline by the time they get grandchildren. If that happens, you will have less familial support. Expand this trend out over a generation or two, and start having kids at 40 will just mean that the generations don't get to know each other. that the caretakers will be stuck between children who desperately need their time and attention and elderly parents in their twilight, unable to serve the young family that's in the thick of the most labor-intensive years. And how many children do you think those burning at both ends parents will have? How much fun will it be? Yes, and of course, taking care of aging parents while at the same time taking care of young children is not fun. Is not fun at all. But, and Julie Fredrickson wrote, many American boomers don't want to help with their grandchildren. It's a massive source of tension with my in-laws, along with many of my friends. I think it's a topic that's understudied. Yes. Yeah, that is a big, big issue. My age is a fairly constant source of amusement for my daughter. Hey, look, you qualify for the seniors discount, she might occasionally say. She's not wrong. For me, it's kind of hard to get mad when somebody's totally right. This is cold, but very funny. As Nick wrote, it's easy for boys or single mothers to develop into narcissists. Imagine realizing you're smarter than the only authority figure in your life at the age of three. That is quite funny. All right, let's see. Any other questions, comments, or issues? Yeah, Anthony Pompliano, A. Pompliano, well worth following. He wrote a couple of days ago, March 23rd, he wrote, the U.S. dollar has lost more than 26% of its purchasing power since January 2020. That means $1 from 2020 can buy 74 cents of goods today. This is the hidden tax that destroyed the financial lives of American families. Yes, it's wild how quickly that has happened. And again, that really doesn't even include the massive amount of debt that is occurring. Thank you, Oliver, for the tip. I really, really appreciate that. Yeah, it's wild. Somebody writes, I saw news of a burning Tesla dealership in France. I thought, a dealership burning in France must be a Tuesday. Seriously, the French have so many factions and riot for so many reasons that their violence seems to have lost any meaning or ability to affect anything for better or worse. The French are brutal on children. The French are brutal on children in terms of conformity, in terms of cynicism, and, you know, given that there's a huge cohort of French intellectuals who, at least in the past, seemed to be very, very keen on lowering the age of consent, I would say that there probably is a fair amount of predation on children in France. And of course, if you want more of this, you can join the community at freedomain.com/donate or fdrurl.com/locals. And you can hear about the history of childhood and its effect on the French Revolution. So, I mean, it is one of these things where the left is losing credibility because, of course, they were very, very keen on Elon Musk and electric cars, not a few moments away. All right, let's see here. So Balashi wrote, which I thought was interesting, what happens if high-quality AI models become free, ubiquitous, and inexpensive to run on even low-spec hardware? One, first you can rebuild every productivity app AI first. That starts with Microsoft Word, Google Sheets, and Apple Keynote, but it extends to whole new levels, new kinds of productivity apps. Second, every, quote, smart device will become truly smart. Your fridge can double as your nutritionist, your alarm clock is your sleep therapist, and so on, just like your car is already your driver. Third, moats move to the app layer. As others have remarked, the GPT wrappers may end up more defensible than the GPT model itself. I don't understand that one, but it seems clever. Fourth, physicality becomes relatively more valuable. The hardware, the secure real estate, the in-person community, these are all things digital AI can't deliver. Yeah. A fifth, high human IQ actually becomes increasingly valuable because AI is really amplified intelligence rather than truly agentic intelligence, since it requires a creative prompt to get started. Yes. Sixth, prompt engineering is here to stay because prompting is programming, just in a higher level language. True. Seventh, the most common form of AI doomerism is proven false because we are getting decentralized, ubiquitous AI rather than centralized, monotheistic AI. More like a garden of smart things, an eventual Old Testament god that'll turn you into paperclips. Eighth, the combination of cuts to U.S. industrialized academic research at the same time AI models accelerate discovery will mean a return to individual gentleman scientists in the advance of DSci, decentralized science, a very, very important one. AI is going to ride roughshod through scientific fraud and plagiarism, which is ubiquitous. Ninth, the complement to probabilistic AI is deterministic crypto for captures, for identity, for money, for all these things. Crypto is the digital scarcity that AI can't take. Tenth, the main cost of software development may reduce to reducing the cost of the physical environment. That is, providing society as a service, or to simply giving engineers time to type and experiment in peace. This was already so, but may become even more so. So I think that's actually very clever. I think it's very interesting, of course, with AI, that you can be a whole lot more creative. If you want to create a game, you can just play around with a wide variety of things without having to spend, you know, six to 12 months learning Unity and then 6 months programming from there. So I think it's very cool that people can be a lot more creative. What is your favorite generation on average? Gen X. Boomers are my least favorite. I have some sympathy for the boomers because they didn't have social media and you had to really dig in the library to get alternative arguments from the mainstream, but there was a tweet, I mentioned it a couple of shows ago, about somebody saying that boomers are kind of like toddlers, like you have to hold facts from them because they can't handle them. It's kind of true. And the French are still brutal to their children. Well, sure. Yeah, for sure. All right. Those of us who grew up half-raised by aunts and grandparents are mystified by the lack of participation in raising our own kids, until we understand that extended family helping raise the kids wasn't a universal standard for our parents. They just didn't want to raise their own kids. So why would they want to help out with the grandkids? Yeah, I mean, with my daughter's permission, of course, wherever she's raising her children, my wife and I will just move there. I mean, what could be more important than enjoying grandchildren? And I don't really get it. I mean, certainly by the time you get into your 60s, you should have done the things that you wanted to do in general, travel to the places that you wanted to travel. And so the idea is like, well, we're not going to go and see our kids because we want to do more golfing and go on a cruise. Like, I do not understand that. I do not understand that at all. And I mean, my extended family was pretty important when it came to saving my mental bacon as a child. So yeah, I don't understand the mindset of, well, first of all, they don't understand the mindset of just inheritance. I mean, what's the point of giving your kids money when they're in their 50s, right? They're sort of post, post raising kids, post buying a house and all of that. So I think that if there's going to be a wealth transfer, it should happen before you die. I think that seems to be pretty important. But yeah, I don't really get why people are so alienated and distant from their own children. I think for the boomers, it probably has a lot to do with guilt that they fed their children into the economic wood chippers of foreign banksters by voting for a bunch of feel-good programs without tracking whether they actually did any good, and also without paying for them with their own taxes, right? And I think that also there's a certain amount of shimmer and guilt that comes from the boomers because they know that they're taxing their young, their kids and their grandkids in order to pay for their own retirements. And that's not easy. That's not easy. Somebody says, it's so easy to buy alcohol in a shop. Underage in France, even bottles of spirits can be bought by underage people with ease, I've witnessed. Another brutal thing for the young to experience. Yeah. There's a real tipping point. I finally have started this new novel, and I'm about 20 pages into it. Having a real blast. It's pretty dark, but it's very good. And, you know, one of the things that I'm talking about is the sort of instinctive calculus that people have. I think maybe a little bit more men than women. This kind of instinctive calculus that people have, which is my society, is my environment sustainable or not? And, you know, particularly for those cultures, I mean, the ones that I came from that had to deal with brutal winters and so on, we kind of had to have an instinct for winter, right? Is my food going to be enough to survive winter? Because, like, if it's not, that's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. So, all right. Any other last questions or comments? Tips, very much welcome at freedomain.com/donate. Sorry for the murmur show, but I still have a bit of water stuck in my ear. So it hums, it buzzes a little when I talk, but I'm going to go get that sorted. And so, sorry for having the whispered intimacy of a stalker at 3 a.m. It's the novel The Present Plus. No, it's a different novel. My 60-year-old dad. Yeah, I can't take the kids on your anniversary night because I have band practice with his Go Nowhere local rock band. Yeah. I don't know. It's the I, me, me, I, right? Selfish generation. It's really sad. It's really sad. No, the novel is a love divorce story set in reverse. What programming languages did you work with? I think I counted up at once. It was 17 that I'd worked with. I never worked with assembler. Actually, well, I did, but it was in markup cards, like you had to send your cards in. Of course, I worked with BASIC, beginner supplied symbolic instruction code, which nobody over the age of 12 is supposed to work with. So I worked with BASIC. I worked with COBOL 74, COBOL 85. I did a little bit of work in Python. I did ASP.NET, nothing in C#. A Visual Basic for applications, which was tough. Particularly, I did a lot of programming in Word, and it's very tough because you couldn't step through anything. So it was real cross your fingers and run it and hope for the best. What else did I work with? Love, a language called Love. I just sort of worked on that. Oh, you're teaching yourself C#? All right. All right. What guidelines did you use to fire people during your corporate days? We would have a 3-month probation where they could quit without penalty and we could let them go without penalty. And I just relentlessly, I rolled the dice with employees because I much preferred hiring hobbyists to those with extensive education, because the hobbyist is where the real passion is. And so I would just give people really tough tasks and see how they handled it, see if they were willing to work late, if I was willing to work late, seeing, you know, and of course, people were able to bank their hours and take that time off later and all that kind of stuff. So firing people during your corporate days, did they really understand the business, right? Did they understand that their business was not writing code but pleasing customers? Did they understand that I wasn't paying them, the customer was paying them? Did they filter things through? Does this help make the company money or save the company money, particularly with repetitive tasks and so on? So did they understand the business? If they didn't understand the business, I just have to hold their hand too much when they were coding. If they understood the business, then I could sort of turn them free on things and get it sorted out. All right. Would you date a woman who is becoming a doctor and is in her medical residency? I did a little bit of work in Java. Not C, though. Sorry, it seemed tough. Would you date a woman who is becoming a doctor and is in her medical residency? No, I personally would not. I would not because I, you know, very much wanted to become a father. And a woman who is becoming a doctor and is in her medical residency is not going to spend a lot of time being a mother. I mean, in general, right? Well, she might, but that just means she'd have to quit the whole doctor thing, which is not great for society as a whole. Pay someone, I don't know, to pay for the $500,000 it takes to train someone, even outside of their own payments, then to have somebody leave, and that's pretty tough for society as a whole. So I imagine the woman would become a doctor, and then she's going to be in residency. She's going to be unavailable for a year or two, or whatever residency is going on. It's brutal hours, you know, 24, 48 hours. It's crazy stuff. I mean, absolutely, residency stuff is completely mental. I mean, you can't drive a truck for more than 8 hours, but you can make life or death decisions on 30 hours of no sleep. It's crazy to me. But no, I wouldn't date that. I think also because, you know, for better or worse, or however you want to put it, I really tend to try and think originally. And because I think originally, if I did not teach my child in depth how to think, we would be, over the long run, our paths would diverge. Right? I mean, because if you're not home teaching your children how to think, somebody else is inflicting propaganda on them, and you're, you know, there's a line from Gertrude Stein that just haunted me since I read it like 30 years ago. And she had a very difficult relationship with her brother. And she said regarding her brother, little by little, we never met again. Oof, that's one of these. I was never that impressed with a rose is a rose is a rose. But little by little, we never met again with regards to her brother. And I really felt a very strong desire to stay home and parent, because I want to teach my daughter how to think. And I hope that you find her as delightful as I do. And I hope that you recognize that she's very smart and very outspoken, and certainly willing to criticize and give me feedback, and which I, of course, welcome and enjoy. So I think if a woman became a doctor, I mean, would she really be able to breastfeed for 18 months, which is generally recommended, or would she just be pumping in the sleep room and whatever? I mean, it would just, then you don't get quite the same skin to skin contact and all of that. So, I mean, I don't want to get all emotional here, but I was just enormously blessed, and I know I worked for it and all of that, but I was just enormously blessed to have a woman who is, to me, the greatest mother and partner in the world. I know this sounds like all kinds of bragging. I don't mean that. She may not be perfect for everyone, but she sure as heck is perfect for me and for our daughter. And so it has been just an absolutely magnificent and deep privilege of my life to be able to raise my daughter with my wife. And my wife is, I mean, so staggeringly thoughtful and considerate and affectionate and strong and moral and wonderful and amazing, and what a mother she is. And I think we make a great team in terms of parenting, but I've had the absolute greatest time with that. And of course, it's not just my wife I have to thank for that, but you guys as well. Because without your support, I would not have been able to have this amazing gift of these 16 plus years with my daughter. And, you know, I mean, that my wife and I get to spend so much time together, because, you know, we met in our 30s. So the fact that my wife and I have been able to spend so much time together. You know, like you hear about these couples, it's like, well, over COVID, we were just with each other all the time and we got on each other's nerves. And it's like, the more time I can spend with my wife, the happier I am. Izzy is almost 18. How did time feel? Do you think it just flew by? She's only 16 and change. No, I don't think it flew by at all. You know, if you only see every 10th frame of a movie, then the movie flies by. But because I've been able to spend so much time with my daughter and do so many things with her, I don't feel like it's flown by at all. I feel it's been just right. I mean, it's kind of how we're designed. We're designed to have our children with us and to raise our children. We're designed to do that. That, you know, the way that I'm parenting is really, in many ways, the most natural kind of parenting a style that there is. Just have your kids around and just talk to them, right? And it is I will honestly shuffle off this mortal coil. I will shuffle off this mortal coil with a deep smile on my face at the privilege I've had going through life with these two absolutely wonderful females. This is why it's so funny, you know, to me, when people would say on social media, sort of in the past, oh, you have a problem with women or misogynist or whatever, like, my life has just been so immeasurably enhanced by these wonderful females. I can't say women because my daughter's still a girl, right? I don't want to sound too clinical. But it has been an absolute gift and something so utterly unguessed and unanticipated from my early life. You know, you would never look at my life as a child and as a teenager and say, oh, this guy's going to end up, you know, blissfully married for, you know, in 23 years or whatever it is now going on, right? Hopefully we get another 20, 25 years together. You wouldn't say that. And really is the power of philosophy, Hope to be able to speak with the same amount of passion about their family as you. I hope so too. I have worked so immensely hard to try and transfer the gifts that my accidental intelligence provided to me to others. And this is why I wrote Real Time Relationships. This is why I wrote On Truth. This is why I do the call-in shows. I'm just absolutely desperate to transfer the principles that my relative good fortune provided to me to others. Have you noticed an increase in violence in TV or movies recently? For example, shows like The Boys and Invincible. I step back from violent shows, movies after seeing 300 in the theater. Now I notice violence often. I don't really watch violent movies. For me, it was in the 90s, was it? Early 90s when the movie Casino came out and they put some guy's head in a vice and popped his eyes out. And I was just like, I'm done. Like, I'm not doing this anymore. It's like just horror, just absolute horror. Hey, Steph, why do you think most people are fine with the state having control over them as long as they receive benefits, but are terrified of transhumanists like Elon Musk? And there's sometimes irrational fears of AI. I'm not saying that all transhumanists should be trusted. I don't know what you mean. Transhumanists, what does that mean? Like merging humans and technology? I don't know. But generally, they're more free market leaning. This question is tied to a previous show about how the highly productive members of society generally don't want to defend a culture that attacks them. So the purpose of human beings is to survive, not to be moral. And we want a society where survival and morality are as closely linked as possible. Right, so a free market society is a society where survival and morality are as closely aligned as possible. If you defraud people, you tend to lose your wealth or be sanctioned in some way. Whereas, of course, in politics, if you lie to people, often you will get even more power. So I want a society where the moral are rewarded. Oh, 'tis a consummation devoutly to be wished. I really, and this is why I wrote my novel, The Future, which you should check out, freedomhand.com/books. But I really want a society where the moral flourish and the corrupt lose. Not lose everything, not lose, but a course correction. We have the kind of opposite society at the moment where the corrupt are elevated often and the good are attacked and ostracized. We live in opposite world when it comes to morality. And you can't ever erase the fact that human beings are self-interested and that we work to survive. Because that's the entire reason we are alive and, you know, at the pinnacle of the sort of 4 billion year march of evolution. So I just want a society where, I just like, it's a little thing, I just want a society where virtue is rewarded and vice is punished. And it does not require the integrity of everyone for that to happen. And that's a free market society as a whole. Somebody says, I wish I could have had a dad as civil as you. Yes. Well, it's funny, you know, because when I was working on the conceptions of peaceful parenting before my daughter was born, I mean, there was anybody who doesn't doubt their own progress is on a very dangerous path. You know, like I sort of look at myself as a whole, you know, just some broken kid from a broken home growing up in poverty and so on. And I say, okay, well, what are the odds that I'm going to, I don't know, solve the problem of universal ethics and you know, be this, you know, fairly influential thinker and philosopher and change agent for so many people's lives. It's not something that I ever would have imagined or pictured from my origin story, though I always had great intellectual ambitions. It was not really particularly in the realm of morality, more so in the realm of art and creativity and so on. But I have been relentlessly skeptical of my own potential for really as long as I can remember. Because the odds that I am who I have become, the odds that I was going to be what I became from early on, were so low that it's inconceivable. I mean, like 1,000 people around the world win the lottery every week. But if I am, if what I believe I have achieved, and of course I believe that I have, then I am so unique, and I don't say this with any pride, I have the brain that I have, and I'm very grateful for it, and I try to harness it for the betterment of humanity as much as I possibly can. But the odds of me doing what I've done are so tiny that I was always skeptical of being able to do it. I always felt the push to do it, and I was always incredibly skeptical that I could do it. Who am I to sit there and solve the problem of universal morality that has escaped philosophers and theologians for thousands and thousands of years? Who am I to revolutionize libertarianism by applying the non-aggression principle and self-ownership to parenting and children? Who am I to define free will as our ability to compare proposed actions to ideal standards? Who am I to define love as our involuntary response of virtue if we're virtuous? Who am I to do what I do? And it is inconceivable. It's inconceivable. So I've always had very great doubt and skepticism. And in many ways, there's this sort of Socratic argument, I wanted to prove myself wrong. I mean, I would have actually been kind of relieved if somebody had overturned UPB. All right. Somebody says, I've read a lot of older novels, and I got a sense that in the past, when society was very conservative, that doctors and nurses were given a moral pass to screw like rabbits without a lot of shaming. Was this a true thing or an old writing trope slash theme? I mean, there's an old meme. A meme like, this is what people think sluts dress like, and it's like some hooker, and it's like, this is what sluts really dress like, which is a nurse. I mean, I don't know, because I don't know much about hospital culture. Night shift with a lot of beds around. I don't know. Thank you, dialed in. I appreciate that. Is it likely that someone has autism symptoms because they've been heavily patronized from a young age? That's what I think happened with someone who has autism, who I was talking to in depth. I mean, I don't know. Autism is the great mystery of the age. Autism is the great, great mystery of the age. And I talked about this not too long ago, the fact that the health sciences are not, you know, madly, fanatically going after the causes of autism is pretty suspicious to me. But it is, it's wild. So I don't know. I don't think that mere environmental cues, like, you know, they used to say that schizophrenics were produced by refrigerator moms, like moms with cold hearts and so on. And I do think that there's some biological element to it, though, of course, I'm no expert. It's just my amateur opinion. But I don't know. I don't know. It is it's a mysterious disorder. I mean, I don't think that they can find any particular biological marker for it and all of these things. And, you know, there are people who say it's vaccines. And I don't know. I mean, hopefully with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. at, what is he, at HHS, hopefully they can start to make some progress on this. Because it is tough on families, and it is certainly tough on the kids as a whole. I'm heading to Vietnam tomorrow for a holiday. I'm taking Carl Jung and the Four Archetypes. Have read this, and any thoughts? Thanks. I mean, Jung is interesting, but he's not a scientist, and he's not rigorous, and he did not have the biological substructure. So this mandalas and collective unconsciousness and so on. It's very interesting, and he had a lot of, but he's kind of like Nietzsche, like insights without framework. And that is not something that I find it interesting and stimulating, but it doesn't build, for me, it doesn't build a better life. So he's good to read, in my opinion, and, you know, very good writer. And I was doing a fair amount of Jung in my early 20s. And then when I got to the mandalas, I just really ran out of patience. Yeah, the rise in cancers is not good. It's not good at all. And of course, I assume some of that is because people didn't get their regular checkups. But I don't know what else it is. I know the theories. Yeah, it's rough. All right. Well, I think I will stop here, but I really, really do appreciate everyone's support and time and thoughts today. I will get back to my regular volume soon, I'm sure. I will not have a show this Friday. Sorry, James, forgot to mention. I will not have a show this Friday, but we'll be back on for our regular Sunday show. And I really do thank you guys so much for this amazing life. And freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Please don't forget my free books, freedomain.com/books. Check out the novels. They're very good, and I'm very, very pleased with the new one. I'm trying to dig as deep as I humanly can in the production of prose, even to the point where the flights of fancy are very deep and very powerful, and I'm very interested in that. So have yourself a beautiful, beautiful evening, my friends. Lots of love. Thank you again so much. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.